action taken today is to tell the governor that no action is the action.
Lawmakers gavel out and then back into special session. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 21st. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, getting the youngest Alaskans interested in Tlingit language and culture.
People are really craving cultural experiences for their children and language exposure.
That's tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by Raven Alaska, connecting Alaska's business travelers across the state for more than 50 years. Find more at flyraven.com.
The Alaska State Legislature gaveled out of special session this morning without voting on any of the items on the governor's agenda. Then, almost immediately, lawmakers called themselves back, but on their own terms. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports that the legislature has formally relocated to Anchorage and that they have set aside Medicaid expansion entirely.
As Yogi Berra might have put it, it was deja vu all over again.
Senator Stevens, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Senator Stoltz, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Representative Grunberg, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Representative Lynn, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
The legislature was gathered at the Anchorage Legislative Information Office, where a single protester marched outside with a sign reading, "You should be in Juneau, doing your job." The Senate held two nearly identical floor sessions inside, and then the House did the same. Over the course of 3 hours, there were four pledges of allegiance, four roll calls for attendance, and so on. But not a single bill was taken up. When Senate President Kevin Meyer asked this,
"Moving on to unfinished business, is there any unfinished business?"
An aide to Governor Bill Walker, watching the whole affair, muttered, "A lot." The purpose of these repetitive ceremonies was to gavel out from Walker's special session, where he had asked them to advance a budget, move a bill creating a sexual abuse prevention program, and expand Medicaid, and to do it all in Juneau. Senate Majority Leader John Coghill led his caucus in ending the Juneau session that had been called for and officially reconvening a session in Anchorage, where they had been meeting for 2 weeks anyway.
I would say that the best thing to do, practically speaking, is to meet where we are able to practically assemble the requisite amount of people to do it both economically and practically here.
A legislative poll had been taken, and more than two-thirds of lawmakers wanted to end the governor's special session. They would keep at the budget and the sexual abuse prevention bill known as Aaron's Law, but they would scrap work on Medicaid expansion entirely. Coghill, a Fairbanks Republican, explained the action this way.
The action taken today is, at this point, is to tell the governor that no action is the action at this point.
Democrats in the minority pushed back. Senator Bill Willikowski of Anchorage said his caucus had not been polled on the action. If they had, they would have opposed it and found any vote taken to be against the rules that they meet in Juneau. Willikowski cited a memo from a legislative attorney.
"As much as I enjoy being in my hometown, Mr. President, this session violates the Alaska Constitution."
Willikowski added that it was inappropriate to end the session when nothing on the special session agenda had been completed.
"We have had very little work done on any of these bills, Mr. President. We have not completed our job. We should not be adjourning this special session before we complete our job. We've had no public testimony on any of these items."
But Coghill pushed back, noting that lawmakers had held meetings on each of the three agenda items. Coghill said that with the legislature still trying to find a way to plug a multi-billion dollar deficit, they would keep working on the budget to avoid a government shutdown. Plus, Coghill said, the legislature always had the ability to gavel out without doing anything.
We had the right the very first hour that he did it.
The legislature voted to end the first special session and call a new one on caucus lines. The rest of the Thursday meetings were mostly uneventful. But when Coghill led one of the day's four prayers, the invocation took on a special significance.
Creator of the world that we get to see and of the people we get to know and of the work that we get to do, we sure could use your guidance.
If that guidance were granted, the governor might appreciate it. In a written statement, Walker said he was disappointed that the legislature had not voted on any of his three agenda items before adjourning, and that he was, quote, deeply concerned about the legislature's lack of progress on a fully funded budget. In Anchorage, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Golden Valley Electric Association plans to start up a long-idled Healy area coal-fired power plant next week. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the facility is being put to use after nearly 20 years of failings and dispute.
The power plant is one of two Golden Valley Electric Association has in Healy to burn coal from the next-door Yucabelli mine. GVEA Vice President of Transmission and Distribution Mike Wright says Healy 2, formerly known as the Healy Clean Coal Plant, is scheduled to fire up May 27th.
And that'll be on oil to start wringing out the plant systems, and then they'll start first fire on coal end of July, early August.
Wright says Healy 2's power output will displace higher-priced natural gas and oil-fired electricity generation sources, but it's not expected to significantly affect customer bills.
We should see a slight decrease in our average cost of power bringing this plant on board, although we will have to put the capital costs into our utility rate, so there'll be some increase on that side of the equation.
Wright stresses that coal is a long-term, price-stable fuel. GVEA purchased the Healy 2 plant from the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority in 2013 for $44 million. The deal followed a drawn-out legal battle that began when the $300 million, largely state and federally funded experimental plant failed to meet the utility standards in the late 1990s. Bringing the mothballed facility online now entails major upgrades, including Environmental Protection Agency-required emissions system improvements at both of the utility's Healy coal-fired plants. Changes, Wright says, add to the overall project cost.
I think all in, it's right around, they're estimating right around $180 million purchase, restart, and then the extra environmental equipment that has to be added to both plants.
Wright says one looming coal-fired power issue is new federal CO2 emission standards that could cap output of the greenhouse gas. He says that could require shutdown of GVEA's older Healy 1 plant. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The border between Hyder, Alaska, and Stewart, British Columbia soon will be open 24 hours a day. Senator Lisa Murkowski's office announced yesterday that after many discussions with her office, the Canadian government has agreed to work with U.S. officials to open the gate and keep it open all the time. Here's Murkowski spokesman Matt Thelling.
This is an imminent change. It is not something that's going to happen overnight. We don't have a timetable, but the good news is that the political obstacles to removing the lock, box, and key approach have been removed. The political obstacles are out of the way, and a resolution has been reached.
The border has historically been open 24 hours a day, but starting this spring, Canadian officials decided to cut costs by closing the border between midnight and 8 a.m. The approximately 100 residents of Hyder who depend on Stewart for medical care were concerned about access to emergency services. The Canadian government responded with a proposal that emergency providers could have a key to open the gate when needed. Felling says that with the new agreement in place, people on the Canadian side of the border will be able to cross between midnight and 8 a.m. without stopping or checking in.
For Americans or tourists on the American side of the border who want to travel into Canada, there will be some sort of an electronic box, a display, a camera, where they report their, it might be a license, it might be a passport, they will have to report in and announce that they are entering the country, whether through submitting their process or scanning an ID.
Felling says officials are still figuring out the details on how the system will work, so a precise timeline is not known yet. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a strategy for getting teens to behave better that appears to be working in Anchorage.
If we could just help kids build on their strengths, increase their social-emotional skills, give them more caring adults, give them opportunities to contribute.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan is one of five freshmen on the Senate Armed Services Committee, and he's carving out a place for himself among the national security hawks. Today, the committee heard from two architects of the 2007 surge in Iraq. Retired General Jack Keane calls President Obama's war strategy, quote, fundamentally flawed, and says it can't defeat Islamic State. Frederick Kagan, a former advisor to General Petraeus, says the U.S. should now send up to 20,000 troops to Iraq. Senator Sullivan had a chance to ask questions near the end of the hearing. Sullivan says the president should prepare Americans for prolonged war.
I think sometimes we look at what's going on with ISIS and other issues in the Middle East and think, hey, we're going to have this done in a couple months, 18 months, 20 months, maybe a couple years.
Sullivan says Obama should tell Americans this war will last much longer and win their support for ongoing U.S. combat in the Middle East. The senator looked to the witnesses for backup.
Do you think that there's an importance to having the leadership, both in terms of Congress, but particularly the executive branch, talk more broadly and, again, level with the American people about, look, this might be a generational conflict. This might be akin to the Cold War.
Kagan, now at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, a conservative think tank, agreed.
And we do need to understand that this is a war. These are battlefronts on a common war that is going to last for a long time. And we don't get to end it unless we win. But you don't get to decide. We may not be interested in war, but war is interested in us.
None of the witnesses at the Senate Armed Services hearing defended the current military strategy. Committee Chairman John McCain of Arizona said the defense secretary and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs will testify at a hearing in June. Since the start of the year, there have been several major changes in leadership at the Alaska National Guard. Lori Hummel is now Adjutant General, and Colonel Joe Streff is heading the more embattled half of the organization, the Army National Guard. Streff has been in the Guard since 1987. He sat down with KSKA Zachariah Hughes to explain his plans for the Guard's changing mission in the wake of difficult revelations about misconduct.
We've established a sexual assault prevention and response program. And so, you know, our number one priority with that, of course, is to ensure that, anybody that's suffered such an assault, assisted. But the other part of it is prevention. And it's so vital that we establish an organizational culture that's not tolerated. You know, as with a safety program, you want zero accidents, with the sexual assault prevention program, you want zero assaults. So that's what our objective is as an organization. Law enforcement, I think, is one of the key things. You know, as we go through the findings, we know that we have to establish good order and discipline. And with law enforcement, both within the provost marshal program that we've established and working with the local authorities, we're ensuring continuity that if there is a problem, within this formation, working with law enforcement to make sure people are held accountable.
While the investigation was going on and then the Guard was very much in the news, did morale change within ANG? Is it something that people were talking about? Was there a mood switch? And I'm especially curious because you've been here for so long, and I'm curious if you felt like the weather switched at all while this was happening.
Well, there was a switch from the standpoint that there was a change in leadership. And when you have a change in leadership, you have a different view of the organization based on the visions and the missions that the new leaders have come in. So right now, the Adjutant General has gone ahead and established a culture of openness and, you know, communication, setting high expectations. And so as this organization transitions into the future, I think there's a change, you know, with optimism and a newfound goal to accomplish. Again, I fall back to, you know, what our mission is: supporting and defending the Constitution of the United States and helping the state of Alaska prepare for whatever contingency might occur.
And when you talk about a cultural switch coming from the new adjutant general, how does that look within, you know, kind of on the ground? Because it seems like a very broad thing to say, changing a culture.
Well, you know, changing a culture is difficult, but nevertheless, what you do is you establish a different vision for the organization. And, you know, the adjutant general has identified three key areas: rural engagement, emergency management, and responsibilities in the Arctic. And when you have that, what you're doing is you're establishing a different paradigm than what maybe the previous leader would have had.
And you've got kids who are in the Guard as well. And I'm curious to hear your interpretation of why it's still a palatable deal and why this organization is still important.
Well, I have full faith and confidence in the Alaska Guard, and evidenced by encouraging my children to be members. I've got a daughter and a son, both who are serving. And as they look at the opportunities that are available to them, and I just see the opportunities across the spectrum of the population here to participate. You know, one of the things that we're looking at is recruiting a number of people throughout Alaska, and those opportunities exist to bring in a diverse population. So that's a huge opportunity for everybody.
Colonel Joe Streff leads the Alaska Army National Guard. A Nenana-based barge line will soon be hauling some unusual cargo. 28 wood bison bulls are scheduled to travel on inland barge from Nenana to the Innoka River near Shagaluk, beginning sometime next week. A larger group of cows and calves was delivered to the area by cargo plane earlier this year and released into the wild on April 3rd as part of a long-term effort to reintroduce the species to the wild in Alaska. Fish and game biologist and pilot Tom Seaton is the Wood Bison Project leader. He says that the males will be transported in the same shipping containers used to airlift the cows and calves, with some new modifications to make their trip on the barge more comfortable.
We increased ventilation by a significant amount. We now have air conditioning units and fans installed in there. We've got a watering facility in there. And if they do get a little bit warm still with all that, we've got misting that we can go from river water just to kind of keep the containers and the animals a little bit damp to cool them down if we have these really hot days. Because as you can see, it's, you know, high 70s in May here, which is pretty amazingly warm.
Two handlers will travel with the bison on the barge to monitor their conditions around the clock. The barge will not stop along the Yukon to deliver additional freight as it normally would. Instead, it will be moving downriver as quickly as possible to minimize the time the bison have to spend in the containers. The adult and juvenile bison were raised at the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Center in Portage from Canadian stock. The bulls will be transported by truck from Portage to Nenana and then transferred to the barge.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you. Alaska Pacific University offers an affordable education, small class sizes, and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Graduate with work-ready experience in the career field of your choice. Apply now for fall 2015. Find out more about APU's Promise Tuition Grant and other scholarships at alaskapacific.edu. This message is sponsored by APU.
A new study shows kids in Anchorage are better behaved than they were 20 years ago. A comparison of data from 1995 and 2013 shows teenagers are participating in fewer risky behaviors like smoking, drinking, and unprotected sex. And for many measures, they are doing better than the national average. KSKA's Ann Hillman looks at what may be behind the change.
20 years ago, behavioral health research started to show that if you want teenagers to behave, stop nagging them. Michael Karofsky with the Anchorage Youth Development Coalition says there's an easier, more positive way.
If we could just help kids build on their strengths, increase their social-emotional skills, give them more caring adults, give them opportunities to contribute, meaningful opportunities, feel support from it, having caring teachers, a whole bunch of things. If we did all of that, then all the negative behaviors go down. We don't have to talk about alcohol. We don't have to talk about suicide. We don't have to talk about depression. All we got to do is build on these strengths.
So a group of youth-focused organizations in Anchorage did just that. And new data shows it might be working. Teens in Anchorage used to rank higher than the national average for considering suicide, experiencing sexual violence, smoking pot, and feeling unsafe at school. Now they rank lower or equal for most risky behaviors. The data is based mostly on the CDC's Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which is self-reported. But Karofsky says that doesn't make it invalid.
They've gone to great lengths to make sure that the survey is reliable and valid. They have, you know, all kinds of checks and balances built in, so if kids mark random questions, the computer can pick that up and can throw them out.
Karofsky says it's not only supportive families, teachers, schools, and youth agencies that can help strengthen kids' resilience.
You know, all of us have a role. And you know, even if you don't have kids, if you certainly see kids in the neighborhood. And you don't have to go overboard, but just waving or saying, I use the example of a beggar in the grocery store. If you see somebody, look at their name, say, hi, Sam, or hi, Joni, whatever. You know, it's like, wow, that guy, you know. Every kid loves to hear that.
You can see how Anchorage stacks up against the nation and select cities on our website, alaskapublic.org. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
The Alaska Heritage Institute is helping to foster the next generation of Tlingit speakers in Juneau. It recently launched a free early childhood program. KTOO's Lisa Fu attended last month's Baby Raven Reads Family Night, which aims to infuse Native culture in early literacy, connect families, and create safe spaces for the Tlingit language.
Families and young children mill around tables in the lobby of the Walter Soboleff Building. There's a station for coloring, one for science. Margaret Katsik and her two-year-old niece, Elena, are at the snack table.
Do you want some water?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't remember what it's called? Heen? Say heen. Heen. Heen.
This is their second Baby Raven Reads family night. Katsik says they're a fun way to learn the Tlingit language for her niece and herself.
They say the best way to learn something and get to know something is trying to teach it, so I definitely work on the words that I do know. I work with her on it a lot.
But Katsik says Elena picks up songs better, and lucky for her, there are several that evening with language learner and teacher Mary Folletti. Inside the clan house, about 30 children, infants to five-year-olds, start off sitting on small rugs or on the laps of family members. Moments later, many of them are on their feet, singing, laughing, and dancing along. About 40 adults sitting on the periphery watch their children smiling. Some join in the singing. Folletti helped translate these songs several years ago.
Those songs are great because the kids are already familiar with them, and they are the same idea. You know, we do things different, like dance like a Tlingit, so we say things like that, but it is like turn yourself around. So it's got a lot of the same ideas.
Folletti says exposing children to the sounds of the Tlingit language is important for development.
I know people who learned the Tlingit language when they were older, and because they had never tried to make those sounds before, they had never heard those sounds before, they physically could not make the sounds. So I think it's important for them to hear it.
early education specialist Karen Larson is working with Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. She says the Baby Raven Reads program emulates other early learning practices. It gives out free children's books, like the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. It brings families together, like events organized by the Association for the Education of Young Children. And it's all done in ways relevant to Alaska Native families.
People are really craving cultural experiences for their children and language exposure. And then people bring their own culture to it and it grows from there.
Parent Pamela Craig is one of those people. She's with her 2-year-old son.
This is exactly the kind of thing that I think he needs to be able to meet up with his peers, his Native peers, from an early age and be able to work with them and have people to talk to, you know, especially learning language.
Craig says the Baby Raven Reads events are good for her as well.
Just looking around, I have family here, my relatives and other people I've met through the years going to different Native events, and so it's a good opportunity for me.
That's part of the early childhood program, creating community. Jackie Kukesh is the education director for Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. She hopes people like Mary Folletti will be an inspiration to parents and relatives.
To sing along with Mary and their children and try to pronounce the Thlinkit words that are in the song, it takes a lot of courage. And so if that's an outcome we come away with, I say that's phenomenal. Creating those safe places for the language to be in the air and to be heard and for everybody to do it together.
Kukesh hopes the program will make more parents comfortable singing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star in Thlinkit with their children. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at alaskapublic.org or follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, Zachariah Hughes and Dan Hillman in Anchorage, Tim Bodoni in Galena and Lisa Fu in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Anchorage and Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Many Alaskans who die in boating accidents don't die of hypothermia. Without a life jacket, drowning kills long before hypothermia does. More at pledgetolive.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Office of Boating Safety. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Garrison Keillor, one of the most beloved radio hosts and acclaimed humorists, is coming to the Alaska State Fair with his America the Beautiful tour on Sunday, August 30th at 3 p.m. This 2.5-hour show will feature Prairie Home Companion classics with piano master Richard Dworsky, sound effects man Fred Newman, and other special guests. Tickets at alaskastatefair.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.